I've just read all 9,482 instances of GRA in the English language, and they're all funny.
I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for episode number 66 of Video Games Hot Dog. Ooh, how you boys been?
Two-thirds of a centennial. I've been good.
A little less than two-thirds, right?
Well, sure.
Right. One-tenth as much as 666.
Well, two-thirds of the way through this episode will be at a centennial. The centennial.
Sure.
Two-thirds.
Yeah, I think we're probably already two-thirds of the way through this episode.
Oh!
How you guys been?
Been all right. How you been?
Well, not too bad. Getting a lot of things fixed around the house.
Yeah.
Failing to get a lot of things fixed around the house. Mm-hmm. Apparently a man says that my vacuum cleaner will someday work again.
Awesome. A man does?
I don't know if he just means like when there is the vacuum cleaner rapture. And all of the virtuous vacuum cleaners are raised bodily into vacuum heaven.
And vacuum that... holla.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, isn't holla the bread?
Yeah. That's probably why my vacuum is broken in the first place.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Made out of
bread. I use it as both a garbage disposal and a floor cleaner.
Hmm. I thought you were trying to,
like
to bake bread with it, and you're like, you just don't know what vacuums are for.
Roy discovered the other day that my house has a garbage compactor. Which I don't think it's even, I was going to say it's not hooked up to anything, but I don't know what it would be hooked up to apart from, it's hooked up to the municipal garbage faucet. But yeah, he wanted to build a little Lego diorama in there, of a Dianoga diorama.
That's pretty funny.
Chewbacca holding a stick.
I used to use a garbage compactor when I was a kid. Like, we would compact all our garbage and then store it and then take it to the dump. Once every couple months.
That seems like too much work.
I mean, when you have no municipal garbage collection, you figure out what to do with your trash in a hurry.
Yeah, well, what we did was we put it in a 55-gallon metal drum and burned it.
Hmm.
That's what everybody does back home. That's probably why all the brain
metal?
Damage.
Like, eventually you get enough like cans that you have to put them somewhere.
Well, I mean, you recycle aluminum, and the metal, the stuff that doesn't burn does eventually accumulate, and the top of the metal drum starts to disintegrate. So what you do then is you just find somebody with a backhoe, and you have them push the rusty barrel filled with metal and melted plastic down a bank into a creek. And you start over with a new barrel.
Huh.
And a new creek.
No. Creek is somebody else's problem. Cool. It's pretty good, though. Yeah, so the smell of burning garbage is a smell that I will forever associate with my idyllic country childhood. Hey, roll me in this tire towards the burning garbage, please. Sure thing. Not the electric fence, nor the barbed wire fence, nor the barbed wire electric fence, which, what the fuck? There really wasn't one of those. I never did try peeing on an electric fence. And I probably won't.
It wouldn't
do
anything.
It seems like a bad idea.
You don't think?
No. Because if you've ever looked at like streams of water under high-speed videography, you recognize that the stream is not actually a stream in the sense of like a proton stream, like from Ghostbusters. It's discontinuous. It's a bunch of globules.
Oh.
Yep.
That's disappointing.
I don't trust you until I see you pee on an electric fence. So the next time we go down to Grandpa's, I'm going to verify that the electric fence is on, and then I'm going to make you pee on it.
Take your extremely high-speed, high-resolution video camera with you.
No, I don't want to be anywhere where I can see Kevin's dong. I can stand behind him. I mean, I guess you could have like a... You could have a bladder, a fake bladder. I mean, I guess it would be a real bladder, but, you know, like a sheep's bladder that you filled with sheep's urine.
Oh, okay.
Sheep, one of their evolutionary mechanisms is that their urine is not conductive. So basically what it allows them to do is subdue electric eels with their powerful streams of urine. That's giving them a food supply that is not available to any other mammals.
Yes, I can see how that would be evolutionarily valuable.
Mm-hmm. It's quite an advantage.
Mm.
Anyway, I went and saw Total Recall. It had a woman with three boobs in it for no reason.
Was she extremely sad? Like
no,
the original?
She wasn't fighting back tears. So it wasn't funny at all. Yeah. It was like, hey, the future's weird and I have three boobs. Yep.
Hmm.
Let's move on.
Did I remember you saying that there weren't actually any mutants in it?
No, there weren't any
mutants. So do they explain at all why she has three
they
boobs?
They do not. And, you know, it was in a place where it's like, oh, there's a bunch of weird people hanging out here. And I thought, oh, well, maybe they're weird people with weird body modifications or something, and that'll explain why a woman has three boobs. But, like, nope. It's just like, hey, check it out. Aren't things weird? You want to touch my three boobs? And then he was like, no.
Does it still have Quango or whatever his name is?
No.
Oh.
Pango. Yeah. The penguin pushing around the little blocks of ice.
Yes.
No, it does not.
That's a shame.
No, it doesn't. It's got a tube that goes from Australia to London in 17 minutes through the core of the earth.
The guy?
What?
Instead of having his weird little conjoined twin, he has a tube that goes...
Yeah. Yeah, that guy's really important. It's very important that they find him so that they know where the tunnel to London starts. What about you, Kevin? What have you been up to?
I watched 21 Jump Street, the new movie.
They did a remake?
It was actually pretty good.
It was awesome, actually. I really, really liked it. It was self-aware. And just really, really,
but
well,
not, but
well
not
written.
Too, self.
But not, yeah, but not like annoyingly. So it was great.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it was, especially if you are familiar with the show, just a little bit, it was phenomenal.
And didn't you recently watch that entire series on DVD?
No. I've actually never.
Well,
seen...
you're waiting for them to do the Gilmore Girls remake.
Oh my God, that series, you know, the remake has just of that. Been more and more of a train wreck. The last season and a half that I've seen is just. So bad, like to the point where we've almost talked about just stopping, which I don't know why we don't stop watching the show. It's one of those things. It's that stupid completionist in me. Like, we're so close to finishing the thing, I just want to get it done, you know, instead of stopping watching it. But
just
at this
watch
point,
them at one and a, just watch them at 2x speed.
I would at this point, actually. Yeah, it's that bad.
I don't think they can do that with television shows, buddy.
I bet they could do it. I bet they just don't do it.
They didn't stop to consider whether or not they should.
Yeah. If you just showed every other... If it was actually... If you had every other frame, like if it was film, you could just show every other frame or speed it up to 2x speed and then play the audio at 2x. That's totally, totally doable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that. I mean, because you can fast forward.
You could get somebody to write a script for VLC that would do it or something.
If you were watching a Western, everybody would be even faster than the fastest draw in the West.
Oh, yeah.
You wouldn't be able to tell what the fuck was happening.
It's true.
You know, I could digitize the audio, and then I could just run it in fast forward at 2x speed and play the audio on my iPod. Yeah.
You could if you wanted to spend even more time on your Gilmore Girls habit.
That's true. That's true. Well, it depends on whether the time savings from playing it at 2x speed would be more so than the time spent setting up the system to do it.
Yeah, but you could duplicate that effort out to everybody, right? Like, once you had done that once, you could distribute it and say, hey, do you guys want to watch Gilmore Girls for some fucking reason, but you don't want to spend the amount of time that it takes?
If a guy and a half can watch an episode and a half of Gilmore Girls in... half of an hour and a half.
Have you ever watched, have you ever listened to the audio from Gilmore Girls at 2x while watching watching an episode of Golden Girls at 1.5x? I've heard it syncs up.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Golden Girls is a lot more interesting if you interpret it as it only being about Rose and all of the other women are just her, like, sort of crazy alternate personalities.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, I feel like every TV show gets to be more interesting if you interpret it as some sort of solipsistic fantasy.
Everybody in Seinfeld except for Jerry is a ghost.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see. I got nothing. Friends actually takes place underwater. Anyway, you guys been playing any video games?
Just the usual suspects. Although I did,
they made a video game.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, but no spoilers. I did discover what I think is probably the most hilarious video game related trick I've ever heard of, at least in recent memory.
Okay.
I was reading a Let's Play of the old Parasite Eve game, and the author made the suggestion that whenever you're playing a video game where the dialogue is captions rather than voice acting, mm-hmm. if a character has a line that consists only of an ellipsis, mm-hmm. you should read that as flatulence.
Huh.
And keeping that in mind made the rest of the LP like 5,000% funnier. And now that I've...
You realize now that that's something that we do in one of our games, right?
Yes. Okay. And now that I've said this on the air to all you people listening, I have ruined every Squaresoft Square Enix game for you. Except by ruined, I mean greatly improved.
We should.
So you're welcome.
We should turn on a mode. We should have an unlockable mode in Word Realms that actually plays fart audio.
Fart noises.
Every time a ... passes
the
through the
best
system.
Part is when the other character's lines still apply. So it's like, penny for your thoughts? Are you feeling okay?
Was it six dots in a row, that last one?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I guess in your mind, you are the sort of fartour. So you insert whatever farts are the funniest.
Exactly.
The most situationally appropriate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to go back depending on, the facial expression on the person. And
sure.
Also, I'm 8 years old.
Mm-hmm. Aren't we all? So that's playing Fart Master.
Fart Master 6000.
Yes, that's what I've been doing. Also, I bought a 3DS XL, but it's still doing its initial charge, so I don't have anything to report on it yet.
I mean, it's going to be... It's like a 3DS, only bigger.
Well, yeah. But I can give a more detailed report.
There's still no fucking games for it.
Quality
is it,
of it. Yeah.
I mean, what do you mean there
there's
are no
stuff
games?
Coming like, out closer
aren't there billions
to,
of
closer
old
to,
school games? Right? Like, can't you just buy every old Nintendo game?
Well, sure.
Yeah. They did come out with Kirby Pinball recently for it, which was one of the best pinball games on the original Game Boy.
So it's really better than still, Revenge of the Gator.
I don't think I ever played that one.
It's pretty good. Pretty good pinball game. Not enough pinball games took advantage of being video games.
Yeah. Kirby did well with that. It has a lot of, different switches that you can hit that cause very different things to happen that could never happen on a physical pinball table.
You're going
stuff.
Into different rooms and stuff.
Yeah, different rooms, and there's a squid that is playing goalie at a soccer net for you to try and hit the ball into and things like that.
What's that Jason Rohrer game where you keep going inside your enemies?
Inside a star-filled sky.
Yeah. Imagine playing that as a pinball game. Every time your pinball goes into something, you get a new pinball game that's inside that thing, and then you can keep getting higher and higher score multipliers if you just keep going deeper and deeper inside the pinball game.
I feel like Inside a Starfield Sky would have been a lot more interesting to me if it had been clearer what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, Disgaea had that same sort of mechanic where every item is also a dungeon that you go into, and for every like mid-boss or the final boss of the however many levels happen to be in that item, for every one of those guys that you defeat, that item becomes more powerful. And that was a lot more obvious is what was going on and more directly useful.
Well, like if you went into like
Starfield Sky,
if you went into like a sword, was the dungeon shaped like a sword?
No.
Nah.
If you went into a dungeon, did other items drop that you could then also go into inside of?
Yes, they did.
Huh.
From inside, from in that dungeon, or did you have to like leave?
I think you had to leave. I think there was a specific shopkeeper type NPC
keep your inventory
who would let you into an item.
Like you, if you went into a dungeon that was like inside a hat, and then you went inside that inside the hat dungeon, and like a pair of boots dropped. Did you get to keep those boots outside of the hat?
Yep.
That doesn't make any
sense. And it worked on everything, even the most trivial things like chewing gum that gave you like 5 MP back. You could level it up if for some reason you wanted into like mega chewing gum that would give you 50 MP back.
If you went inside a dog, was it too dark to read?
I did not try that.
There weren't any dog items.
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin, you been playing any video games?
I have. I mentioned it briefly because I had just sort of looked at it last week, but I finished playing through Seedling, which is a Flash game on Kongregate. It is reminiscent of...
Say the name again.
Seedling, S-E-E-D-L-I-N-G.
Yeah, I realized after I looked at it that I had already played it.
Had you?
Yeah. I did not like it.
Really? It is reminiscent... Okay, the story is terrible. The writing is pretty bad. The gameplay is pretty reminiscent of like Zelda, though, which was enough of an excitement for me to sort of stick with it. And it's pretty nonlinear. You can go to a variety of different dungeons and stuff. Like, there's some things are definitely gated off, but you can choose between two or three dungeons at most points throughout the progression. And it was good. It was a lot of fun. Like, it's a lot of puzzles, a lot of like arcadey style combat. You get upgrades and weapons and stuff like that. For a relatively small Flash game, I was pretty impressed. But yeah, the writing was terrible. And then while I was on Kongregate, I also played a game called One and One Story, which is sort of like a puzzle platformer game.
Oh, where you're like in love and the rules keep changing.
Yes, the mechanics change as the story does, which is kind of like Braid, kind of.
It was like all the pretentiousness of Braid crammed into 1/50th of the time.
Sure. It wasn't like super complicated, but it was neat. It was like a neat little artistic game. Definitely worth checking out.
I mean, it didn't take long, and it was worth playing from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I mean, like 2 years ago when it came out.
Sure. And then I went back and I finally finished Space Chem. Holy fuck, is that game hard?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I need to do that too.
It is.
Although I don't know which version I want to play, because I really like the tactileness and the way it controls on the iPad, but the iPad version doesn't have the bosses.
What? The whole point of the game is the bosses. Like, that, I don't understand how they would play it. I don't understand like what the narrative would be without the bosses, because that's kind of the whole.
There is no narrative anymore.
How do the bosses work?
Oh.
The difference with the bosses was that you got, like, switches. Like, you could create subroutines and then turn those things on and off, so as it would pass this marker, it would either go to A or not A, depending on whether you had that bit flipped.
Yep. At the end of the game,
so you would want A equals A if you were fighting the Ayn Rand boss.
Yeah. Right. I don't want to like spoil anything, but the end of the game is basically a spaceship fight between you and another thing, where you have to generate all the chemicals necessary for missiles, lasers and thrusters, and then control all of those things with your switches to actually be able to do anything, to dodge asteroids and alien ship lasers. It's pretty intense. It's hard enough just to figure out how to make those things, but then how to make them such that you can also address them and have them actually respond in any kind of reasonable time is ridiculous. That game, super, super cool story overall. Like, the writing was pretty good and it was neat. Yep. But just really, really hard.
Yeah. When you get something to work and it works like prettily, it is so satisfying.
Yeah. There were all kinds of tricks that I just didn't understand, and had to go back and look at some of my old levels because I hadn't played it in like a year or so. And like, mm-hmm. just like doubling back on your own path was something that I had forgotten that you could do. For a long time, I had forgotten that you can alter the nodes, the, like the grab and drop nodes, to be just individual grab or drop. So I was trying to do everything where every time it would pass over to that thing, it would either pick it up, it would either pick up or drop whatever it was carrying, and that was just such an added headache. But there's also a bunch of user created content. I think it's pretty heavily curated, but the user created levels are really good. They're like thematically interesting and also just good puzzles. So like there's a lot of content to that game. Definitely worth,
highly recommended.
Yeah, definitely worth going back and looking at. We did it as an assignment way back in the day, I think, and I'm glad I went back and finally finished it.
Wait, really?
Didn't we?
I don't think we did Space Camp as an assignment.
Oh. I know we talked about it extensively.
Oh, okay. Maybe Riff and I just played it. Did you play it, Zach?
I tried.
Huh.
I think I own it. And I think I played a few levels of it, but I don't know. Like, it's that sort of thing just isn't really fun to me. It felt like work.
You're not into that sort of dry logic puzzle kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so I feel like in a lot of ways, at a certain layer of abstraction, Space Chem is The Incredible Machine, right? And I very much enjoyed The Incredible Machine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. Space Chem just didn't.
It's all algorithms with a lot of extremely frustrating and arbitrary constraints.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I never quite got the hang of the interface, and so there was such a layer of cognitive effort between figuring out how to do something and then actually executing it that I just kind of wasn't having fun with it. And I mean, it seems like there's a lot of like trial and error, and it's like set this thing up and then try it and see where it goes wrong and then adjust it a little bit. And I always end up trying to bite off more than I can chew as far as how much to change in a given iteration. And then I just lose track of what I'm doing. It's like, it was kind of like once Train Yard got hard, I stopped having fun with it.
Yeah.
When it got to the point where it's like, all right, I can set this whole thing up, try it, and then realize, oh, nope. I just need to start over because this was entirely the wrong way to go about it. My solution got me 95% of the way there, but
yeah, I mean, I would do that in Space Chem, and like while I was kind of like, oh God, I can't believe I'm scrapping all of this work. Like every time I did that, I felt like I learned something and got better. Right, like it was teaching me. It's like teaching algorithms in a way that's fun. Is kind of how I was viewing it, you know.
See, I think algorithms are inherently fun, and Space Chem is taking something that I think is fun and making it bullshit.
Huh.
Maybe I should try it again.
But I mean, I don't think your opinion is going to change, you know?
Yeah, I'm kind of a dick that way.
I just really liked it. I really liked all the different things that you do, and like they add verbs as you keep playing. Which changes like how you approach different problems and stuff like that. It's pretty heavily, I don't know that it's realistic, but it tries to be, you know, heavily actually real chemical based. And, so you end up doing a bunch of like fusion and then fission and stuff in different levels to actually traverse different elements in the periodic table and stuff.
So. And the hardest part for me on any given level was just figuring out where the Waldos were. Any other video games, Kevin?
No, nothing besides the assignment.
Wow, really? I thought you said you'd been playing some video games.
Seedling
and One Plus One. Story.
Yeah, I mean, Space Chem was several hours of video game.
Yeah, all right. So I finished Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Cool.
What'd you think?
Kevin, when you played it, which ending did you naturally gravitate towards? Like, what was your first choice?
Unfortunately, it was one that I could not get to. I wanted to, the first time I played through it, side with the Qui-Gen and see what happened. And so I tried to do that, and then I couldn't. So then I just went independent, siding by myself with, I guess, not with the prince. And then I played through the ending again such that I could side with Strauss.
Strauss? Who's yeah. Strauss?
The Tremere.
So that's what on you the YouTube referred to as the Camarilla ending. It was weird. I finally found, like, I just saw, I was like, oh, there's that building where Strauss is. I went in there and I was like, you know, I don't really want to do this because Kevin told me it was some ever-changing maze of hotel corridors that mm-hmm. I don't want to mess with. And I was just like, I'm just going to go in and see what happens. And I just, like, went around in one circle and ended up in the dude's office.
Right. In fact, that is the only way that you can go. If you go that way and then try to leave, good luck.
Oh, yeah? Does it always funnel you into the guy's office?
Yes.
Okay, yep. So it's not actually a puzzle that you're supposed to solve. It's just a thing that's supposed to be confusing.
Well, I mean, I try to, like, thoroughly explore the environment before I go in any door, which I think is why, like, exactly what that puzzle was trying to fuck with. So, like, there's one extra room in there that you can find, but every other path just takes you to that door until you go in there. It's kind of a neat conceit. It's just,
but I went in there and all he did was give me another copy of, like, a quest that I had already done, and then my only option was like, fuck you, I already did this for the Anarchs.
Yeah, that's, if you don't go in there early, you kind of fuck yourself out of a lot of stuff, which sucks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but does it suck or is it an opportunity for meaningful branching?
Yeah, I mean, it is narratively interesting. It is mechanically, you are just screwing yourself out of rewards. So
I sided with the prince and got killed.
That sucks.
At the ending, it's like, ah, cool, I guess. Thanks, Bender.
I liked that ending. I went back and sided just to see what would happen, just so I could see what was inside the
I just played it the way that I was going to play it and then watched all the other endings on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
It seems like going with Qui-Gon just results in you...
The worst possible ending.
Yeah, the
so
worst
great.
Thing that can happen, yeah.
Yeah. Oh my god, they are such pricks.
It's pretty horrifying. There's, like, no good guys in the whole thing, really.
You don't think Jack's a good guy?
Because they're all vampires.
I don't know. Do you think Jack is a good guy? He smokes.
Who did you think the cab driver was?
Jack's the dude that does the tutorial at the beginning.
I don't know. Do you think the cab driver was Kane?
Yeah, he was pretty good.
They certainly implied it, didn't they? I don't know if that's fair to say.
Or that the cab driver was just some random antediluvian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what canon is for Vampire the Masquerade. Like, do they ever explain... Yeah, Cain was a vampire, and everybody is now descendants of Cain. Like, are there source books that actually spoiler
Cain,
the history?
God cursed Cain for killing Abel and turned him into a vampire, and then he...
And that's confirmed. That's not just, like, this is what vampires believe.
Well,
happened.
I mean, you know,
so
I
like
think,
in
like
the
any
source
good
book,
source
it
book,
is like the Christian God is a real thing.
In the source book, they say this is the creation myth. You know, it's like just like the Bible, right? Like you can take it as literal fact if you want, or you can a game master, like, they make it so, like, purposely ambiguous so a game master can choose what they want to do however they want to play it, right? Like, each campaign will have a different take on what that means. But the idea
Cain
was the first vampire.
Cain marries Sarah McLachlan and they form the Lilith Fair.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The idea was that Cain was the first vampire. He made a batch of, like, second generation vampires, but killed them all. But they made a third generation, and those are the antediluvians. And besides Cain, who is presumed non-existent by a lot of people, by the Camarilla, I guess, the Antediluvians, the third generation vampires, are the ones that are the oldest still living vampires that are in their slumber or whatever.
So Cain made some vampires, then those vampires made the Antediluvians, and then Cain killed the second gen guys?
I believe so. I could be wrong about that. It's been years since I've read those source books.
Were the Antediluvians the common progenitors of the clans?
Yeah. There are 13 Antediluvians or whatever, and that's where the clans come from, I think. And I think the 13 paralleled the whole tribes of Israel or whatever, too.
So then some of them were on Caprica.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
I understand why people like this game so much. And I understand why it is important to people. And I think it is pretty cool. But, like, even cheating like crazy and with all my stats maxed out, the combat was still just such a pain in the ass.
I had no problems with the combat at all, and I don't understand what the variety of experience is there. Like, I went melee. Were you shooting stuff, or were you?
I started out shooting, but then would more or less just do whatever it seemed like was doing the most damage. So later on, I was mostly just using a sword. Huh. But, like, with my stats maxed out, most of the bosses could, like, two or three hit me.
Hmm. With your stats maxed out? Were you wearing heavy armor or anything?
Not until the very end. I didn't ever find any armor until the end game.
Oh. Huh.
Which, and okay. I guess that's because I never actually went back and saw what Mercutio had to sell me.
Yeah, him and also the merchants will sell you stuff and their inventory changes throughout the game and stuff, so.
Nope. You know, and I didn't go back and do any of the quests for the Nosferatu because I didn't want to walk through the fucking graveyard again because I was scared. No, it just... Like, I would have done those quests if I could have turned them in by phone.
Getting back there was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I just didn't want to... I was like, God damn it. That sewer section was so long and so grueling that when I walked out of it, I was just like, fuck those guys.
I spent a lot of time, when I first got to the graveyard, exploring what would later become the exit from the Nosferatu area because it was different and I knew that there was something going on there. But until you go through it from the other side, you can't open that door and do anything. And it was really frustrating as one of those like exploratory type characters to know that this is different and weird, and they've signposted a bunch of strange stuff going on, but you can't do anything because you haven't gotten there in the game yet, you know?
Yeah, it's like it almost feels like it would have been friendlier of them to make it so there was just a wall that you could only knock down from the inside or something.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So just like not to let you into these spaces. Although the spaces weren't useful if you were like a vampire that had to hide all the time and stuff. Right. Because I feel like there were some areas of the game where there were doors that wouldn't open, but the areas themselves were useful because they were dark or out of sight.
Hmm. Okay. Sure.
You know, and like the sewers. You know, there are times when you have to go to the sewers, but you know, as a Nosferatu, you have to be in the sewers all the time. Or as Ron Perlman in that Beauty and the Beast show.
I never played as a Nosferatu. Do they really have to hide from people?
Yeah, I think being seen by somebody is a masquerade violation.
Wow.
For Nosferatu,
that sucks.
That's crazy.
I'm glad I didn't go along with the results of my personality profile then.
Mm. Yeah, you know, it's just, and I still never did, like, every time I got out of a cab, it fired whatever weapon I was holding.
That's hilarious.
Which, I had to, like, so many times I'm like, fuck, and I would have to go replay, like, 5 minutes of stuff, because I was like, all right, I'm going to go there, and then I'm going to save. But then I, like, just instantly, like, the cops are after me for just shooting a gun at a telephone pole. Like, until I remembered to, like, no, I got to switch to unarmed before I get out of this cab.
So then you'd get out of the cab and you would just punch whatever was
Yeah, just punch. It would just throw you into combat and you'd throw a punch.
I hate cabs.
Yeah. Ugh. So glad to be out of that. Yeah. It's a pretty weird bug. for, you know, and who knows, man. So many different people have worked on that shit now.
Yeah.
One thing that I don't know is if any of the content that I saw in my playthrough was stuff that was, like, unlocked by the fan edition.
Did you do the plus patch?
I did.
Yeah, I mean, I think they changed the rewards of a bunch of quests and added back in some missing quests that had been disabled by for some reason or whatever. So, I mean, there's probably here and there were pieces of things. Yeah.
Towards the end, I was just kind of powering through it and not doing a lot of the side quest stuff. I never did finish the serial killer investigation thing.
I'm trying to remember how that played out. I basically did every quest in the game.
And there were relatively few when I looked at. I should read some more spoilers about that. I would like to know more about the way that the game worked, and I feel like I, you know,
find not, a let's play. Or
what
something.
To me, one of the no, I don't think a let's play. Like, I think an actual like overview of the systems and like. Mm. You know, just looking at a list of, like, these are the points in the game where you find all the skill books or whatever. Like, these are, you know, it's sort of like one of my rewards for finishing a game is feeling okay about looking at spoilers
right.
and sort of learning more about the way that the game is put together. But yeah, I don't feel at all bad about cheating.
You never, you know, you never get like, enough skill points to actually max out your skills, like... Even playing through pretty thoroughly, I was never able to even max out all my special vampire abilities.
Yeah. So. What was I gonna say? It felt to me like Planescape Torment. Like, I don't feel bad that I edited my save when I played Planescape Torment, because I was like, you know, I keep getting stuck in fights, right? I knew when I created this character that I wanted just like wisdom and int to unlock all the dialogue options and stuff and, you know, learn the most of the story. Mm-hmm. Right. But then that just makes you useless in combat. And I know you can play such that you avoid combats, but I didn't want to have to be that careful. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to max out all my stats because I'm not playing this for the challenge of managing resources and mastering this combat system, right? Like, I'm playing this to explore how the systems interact and see the world.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't know. You know, I didn't get, like, and that's the thing. Like, with your stats maxed out in Vampire Bloodlines, you're still not, like, a super badass. Like, dudes can still just fucking kill you.
Sure.
And so it's like, all right, I don't really feel like I missed anything by doing that. It's a pretty good game, though. I every once in a while we'll pick an assignment where I'm like, I am glad that something forced me to actually play this all the way through because
yeah, I had never even really heard of that game before it was the assignment, and I'm really glad that you had us play it. It makes me want to go back and finish Deus Ex because I feel like I'm like halfway or two thirds of the way through that, and
you got to Hong Kong.
I had just started Hong Kong. Yeah, when we started.
Yeah, I think you're closer to the end than.
I don't know. There's like, I feel like there's a lot more story to go. But
so I also played a bunch of, not a bunch. I played maybe 2 hours of the new co-op Team Fortress 2 stuff. And it is pretty great.
What is the idea? Like,
it's essentially you and five other dudes randomly selected on a team.
Can you play it with yourself and five bots?
I don't know. But you're playing on some maps that might be maps from the normal Team Fortress 2 games. I don't know. I didn't play enough of them to know. But there are just like waves of robots that come through. Mm-hmm. And they're in most of the levels, they're just like trying to get a bomb to a hatch. And if you shoot the one that has the bomb, he'll drop it. But another one will come and pick the bomb up.
Mm-hmm. Can you pick the bomb up and take it to their end zone?
You cannot.
Okay.
No, it's like a one-way football. You can't, you see parked way over the horizon this big tank that's unloading all the robots on you. You can't actually go there. You can't actually shoot it or shoot the robots until they're on the playfield. I don't really understand what's going on with a lot of aspects of Team Fortress 2.
They're, the free-to-play stuff or the money store stuff related to it is kind of interesting.
It is. And I don't know, like, I saw a bunch of outrage about it, you know, and I saw a bunch of people saying, like, you know, I wish that they would just sell me a video game and then I could play the video game. And then I thought, like, well, if people are objecting to this idea that, oh, here's a thing that you can do and it costs a dollar,
yeah,
like, that seems like a weird thing to object to. I mean, maybe because I grew up in a time when if you wanted to play a video game, it cost a quarter for you to play a video game, right? And that doesn't seem weird to me at all to spend some trivial amount of money on a fleeting experience.
Especially for a game that is otherwise free.
Is it a dollar to do like a meaningful progression thing? Like what exactly does the dollar get?
The way it works is there's two things you can buy. There's one thing that is a ticket that you can buy that lets you play on Valve's own server.
Okay.
And if you're playing on that server, the way it works is there's a number of missions that thread together into, I don't remember what the term is, but it's like there's a set of missions. And if you have one of these $1 tickets that lets you play on the server, then every time you complete a mission in that set, you get an item. And when you've done all the missions in that set, you get a rare item. And when you get that rare item, your ticket goes away. And there's also
That's a dollar.
Yeah.
That is a dollar for...
for a rare item plus one item for each mission.
But there are eight of those missions, I think. And they take about 30 minutes. So, right?
Yeah.
So this is a dollar...
It seems perfectly
fair. It's a dollar for 4 hours of play on servers where... So...
And then there's also a $2 ticket, or not a ticket, it doesn't have the same functionality at all. There's a $2 chit that you can spend at the beginning of a mission, and then at the end of the mission, everybody on the team, including you, gets an item.
Yeah.
But then that chit goes away?
I think that goes away after one mission,
used,
right?
Yeah.
So it's a little strange, I guess, but...
It's interesting.
So... what I found was that when I was playing in the games with other people who paid a dollar to be in that game, they were not as assholey as the people who were playing on the free servers that were just random other dudes' servers.
Yeah,
and so that was like, you know, I think that no more of this that I'm probably going to play in my lifetime. Maybe I will just pay for all of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe I will just always play... on Valve servers with other people who don't mind paying a dollar to play this game, and then that will just put me in with a very, very slight... like, this will put me in with literally the smallest increment between people who are willing to pay for something and people who are not willing to pay for something, unless it was like, you know, it cost one penny to play on this. That would still make a difference, I'll bet. Mm. But just that difference, I think, is a sort of order of magnitude in tolerability and tolerance.
Yeah.
I wonder if you were explicit about that. If you're like, in order to join these forums, you must send us one penny by mail. Right. And like, and then you explain the whole point of this is to weed out the people that are such assholes and so lazy that they couldn't be bothered to do this trivial
task.
That's
how Metafilter works.
That's how Metafilter works. Yeah. That's how Something Awful works, right?
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
like $5 or $10 or whatever to join. And the whole idea is just as a filter, and it works pretty well. But if you're super explicit about it, do you think some of the assholes would be like,
it still work if you were like, you have to pay $10 to join this forum because we don't want assholes who won't send us $10 on this forum?
I think Metafilter is very upfront about that purpose of it.
Yeah, huh.
I seem to remember.
It works, I guess. I don't know that the filter that $5 creates on Metafilter is one that I like. I kind of wish that I had slipped through that particular sieve, just based on I don't get upset enough about declawing cats to feel like I really belong there.
Circumcising your cats.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, I only ever posted to Metafilter once. I made an account so that I could post. One post, and I did it, and I was just like,
a
why?
Post or a comment?
Just a comment.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was just like, why? why do you want Star Wars The Old Republic to fail? That was my post. Hmm. Because a bunch of people were like, yeah, fuck that, I hope it crashes and burns. Rah, 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 rah. The whole fucking internet. You know, like they did. And well, I was like, yeah, come
was
on.
It, was it the at whole internet? Metafilter? Or was it the part of the internet that has paid $5 to be on the internet?
Yeah, maybe it was. I saw it everywhere. And I was like, ah, come on. I expected Metafilter to at least be slightly more, I don't know.
Humane?
Yeah, or just a little more like big picture about it, you know? And like not, like, I expect a lot less, I don't know. Do I expect less like Linux distro hooliganism on Metafilter than I do on like Slashdot? I guess
well,
maybe
compared
I.
Compared to Slashdot. Yeah,
yeah, maybe I don't. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, I was having fun shooting robots.
Cool.
Yeah, and I don't know. One thing that I wish is that, like, when you start a game, you pick a class, and then you're committed to that class for the entire time. And I don't feel like in a lot of cases I'm capable of really contributing with a class that I don't exactly understand how to play. I need to turn on the voice chat so that I can start talking to dudes and asking real stupid questions. Because I don't think people really pay a lot of attention to the text chat.
No, because, I mean, the game is so fast-paced, you can't really
be looking
down there.
Yeah, except there's a lot of downtime in
this. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's... So you have, like, a ready indicator for the next wave. Like, you hit a button to toggle that you are ready. And what that does is, like, the first time somebody does that, it puts a 150-second countdown on the next wave starting. And everybody else who hits ready cuts some number of seconds off of it.
Okay.
But it's still, like... 4 minutes on, 1 minute off. 4 minutes on, 1 minute off. So there is really a lot of time to just sit doing nothing. Hmm. Like, I spend a lot of time tabbed out reading something, waiting for the wave to start again. Which
I guess that's when, like, engineers are supposed to be building their
shit.
Yeah,
setting up their teleporters
like
and building the sentry. Yeah. And, they, like, every couple waves, they send in these things that are just, like, running bombs that find the sentry turrets and blow them up if you don't kill them before they get there. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. Although, it is pointing out that apparently my computer is capable of running Team Fortress 2 for about 6 out of 7 waves before it just fucking locks up.
Oh, that sucks.
I keep getting almost to the end of games of it, and it just crashes, yeah. I've only ever finished one. And, man, I get these items, and I don't know what the fuck, man. Like, I understand as... Team Fortress 2 as it exists now is the accretion of a lot of systems that were put in place to provide a steady trickle of novelty to people who've been playing the same game over and over again for years and years. And it feels like City of Heroes to me in that it is just like, what the fuck is this? Why am I getting items in a game that doesn't have an inventory? Like, why is there crafting in a game that doesn't have items? Why, like, and it's like... Also, half the time I run it, the interface doesn't load properly, and so I have to, like, exit and go back in, and it's like, oh, I tried to put something in my inventory, and now, when it's time for me to select a class in this game, 2/3 of the classes are, like, off the left of the screen.
Oh.
So, like, I have to keep, like, adjusting the resolution and waiting for it to, like, re-flicker the screen back into the right resolution for the interface to fix itself. Yeah, it's kind of glitchy.
Huh. Maybe you need to delete your shit and re-download it.
Maybe I do. I mean, I just reinstalled it after Man vs. Machine. Anyway, I'm having fun with it. I've also been playing a lot of this iOS game called Puzzlecraft. And there are things that I very much like about this game, and there are things that I very much hate about this game. So it is kind of like, flavor-wise, it's kind of Agricola. Like, your actions are to play a dungeon raid style resource collection game.
Okay.
And
Bejeweled, like?
No, it's like Dungeon Raid.
Or you're drawing the path.
Yeah, War Games, Whopper. You're pathing through the adjacent or diagonally adjacent things. And, like, you'll start out and there is a field of grass and grain. And you, like... The longer stretches of grass you collect, the more likely it is to drop grain in from the top. And if you collect a bunch of grain, it'll drop carrots in. And then if you collect enough carrots, it will create an apple. And then, you know, you can get...
This is how farming works.
And you, yeah, exactly. And so you get a bunch of, like, for every 20 grass you collect, you get a haystack. And for every, you know, 10 grain you collect, you get a loaf of bread or whatever. And then you start having to spend those resources upgrading stuff, like hiring a farmer so that it takes less grain to make bread, and building a house so that you get somebody to hire as a farmer. And then there are a bunch of, like, tools that get built that are one-use verbs, like collect all the grass or use this, and then the next thing that you do, all of the replacement things that drop in will be grain or whatever. So then you do that to collect all this food, and then you go to the other mini game, which is mining, which works the same way, except you have to spend food to get into the mining game. And then it starts to be like, all right, well, so now you need some stone and some metal to put this next upgrade in. And it's a really, really long and complex system of upgrades to this sort of basic gameplay.
That sounds really interesting.
The problem is that one of the systems in the game is that you click on your town hall and you get some gold out of it. And it costs, you have to pay people to work the farm. So every time you want to play the farming game, it costs you 30 gold. And the way that you get gold is by clicking on your town hall every 2 hours.
Oh.
And it's a paid game. It is a goddamn standalone video game that I paid $2 for, but it builds in that fucking Nimblebit Facebook horseshit. God. And it's not important, right? Like I've played the game like once a day, and I know that I'm missing out. Also, I've got all the fucking notifications turned off, but it still buzzes at me every once in a while that's like, hey, you can collect your gold now. Which I don't know if I just fucked up and didn't actually turn the notifications off, but it's like they made this awesome thing and then they just shat it up with some Facebook bullshit, and wow. Like you can buy your way past all of the progression elements with coins, and you can just buy coins as in-app purchases. It's like they did they're simultaneously doing every revenue and retention model at the disposal of a developer. And the game is fucking fun, and I just feel like an asshole for playing it. Like, I think if you had described it to me, the fact that it had that every 2 hours you check in and get the fucking gold out of this thing would have made me not buy it. But I looked at it and I was like, oh, this looks cool. It's another game that uses that dungeon raid mechanic, and it looks like some upgrades, and I like a game about making a cool farm. That's a thing that I like personally. Me, Zach.
I had looked at getting it on the App Store, and was really discouraged by just the every review saying this game is great except for it crashes all the time. And so I was like, "Huh, I guess I won't get that until they've got a new version." Did you experience any of that at all? Or
no, I've never had it crash. Although almost every time you run it, it has to go through like maybe a minute long loading process. So maybe it's crashing in the background. Is what's happening.
Weird.
I tend to ignore, unless it's just a ridiculous number of them, I tend to ignore crash reports on
it was Apple every reviews. Single it was every single review on the top of the review list.
Yeah.
So I was okay. Like, okay.
I mean, I can't say it's a bad game, because it's sort of like Triple Town, yeah. Right? Like, Triple Town was a great game that was hobbled by its Facebooky horseshit nature. And when they released that, you know, like, I paid the amount of money that they asked me for to turn that shit off.
Yeah,
right.
And yeah, I don't know, it's if it wasn't like, this is just so, it is so compelling, like to trace a line of chickens and have it pop a pig in, and then it's like, oh, you know, if you can spend 4 chickens, 3 loaves of bread, 2 carrot soups, and 4 boxes of stone on a man that will make it so it takes fewer chickens to make a pig. I'm like, okay.
Does that man last forever, or is it?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, the upgrades stay there. There's no like maintenance that you have to do. It's just that if you wanted to sit there, you know, I don't even know. Like, I don't know how well balanced the economy is of these things, because all of the resources that you collect can be sold for coins.
Okay.
And all of the resources can be bought for coins at exorbitant rates. Like, you know, it costs 30 times as many coins to buy something as you could sell it for. But since it costs some coins to do the initial outlay of playing the farming game to earn the food that you use to power the thing that lets you earn the stone and the rock and the iron and the stone and the rock.
And the cocaine.
And the dirt. And the Dwayne the Rock. And the Johnson. And the Rock Johnson. And the Rock Lobster.
Howard Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And the Howard Lobster.
The Howard Stern.
Yeah. Stern Lobster.
And the Howard Aft.
William Howard.
I don't know that you could sit and play indefinitely. Right? And I haven't tried. Like, that kind of thing is fun for a little while, and then it's like an on the toilet game, or it's like while I am sitting there doing nothing except listening to a podcast, and it's like, you know, either that or like go wander around the neighborhood finding little kids to kick or something. Like, I don't want to descend into depravity, so I'll play this video game. You know, that's what I do.
Hmm.
So yeah, I'm really torn on whether I would recommend it to anybody or not. I recommended it to a friend of ours because I'm almost certain that he doesn't pay for any of his iOS apps.
Mm.
So I didn't feel too bad about that. Man. You were talking about that horn game.
Yeah.
Apparently Zynga released a real game for iOS and it's $7.
It is. I mean, it's Zynga's publishing it. I don't think they had anything at all to do with its creation. It is basically, from what I downloaded it, I have not yet had a chance to play it. Apparently what it basically is Infinity Blade, except you're not trapped in that very specific path. You have actual free range of movement and can wander around and find side quests, and it only locks you into that sort of forced perspective when you're actually in a combat.
Mm.
And apparently the combat is a lot more interesting, too, because you... The Infinity Blade fights, you're very heavily restricted in when you can act. It's like, I have to block or dodge 3 times, and then I get a chance to strike. Whereas with this, the enemy does his animation, and you're free to try and attack at any point in that. And if your attack would strike his vulnerable part during that animation, then it's a worthwhile attack.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like a much, much more interesting game than Infinity Blade, and it apparently looks great. But yeah, it's $7.
All right. Well, I haven't been playing that, but the things we talked about earlier are what we have been playing.
I'll report back on Horn next week.
What's new, Kevin?
The biggest story that sort of popped into radar, but I haven't heard anything about how it actually resolved, was the On Live thing. I don't know. Did you hear about this?
I heard that they got bought out or something.
Yeah, it is. The story is really weird because there are two very different competing stories going on. One is that they are filing for bankruptcy, which I think is apparently a thing that's happening, but also simultaneously that they're being bought out. And in neither case are they actually going out of business.
Right. And then some people are saying that they're doing it because of they have inoperable brain cancer, but then some people are saying that that's just a bullshit story.
What?
some people are saying that they're doing it as like an asshole like a management thing where the management wants to keep all the money, and some people are saying that they're like doing it because they were out of money and the business was like totally fucked. And
some people are saying that OnLive only existed in the imagination of Phyllis Diller.
Yes.
That, in fact, Phyllis Diller's dreams were all that made that technology actually possible. So suddenly,
I knew it. That totally explains it. I did not ever believe
it seemed
that,
like fucking magic.
That, yeah, that you could play that game with responsive controls going out to a server states away. But if it's all in the dream energy of Phyllis Diller, that completely explains it.
In her sunken crypt below Rely A, Dead Diller dreams Mass Effect.
Yeah.
They're just scared. They're scared of the types of games that are going to start showing up on OnLive now that she's dead.
Oh, man.
That is a veil that should not have been pierced.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was under the impression that OnLive was like a thing that like, oh, that's something that I'll pay attention to in a few years, as opposed to like, oh, a thing that was apparently already like existed as a thing that you could buy, I guess. And
yeah,
I didn't.
They've been functional for over 2 years, actually, apparently. I mean, because I tried it out a year ago and was playing Mass Effect on my Mac back before that was a thing.
Was that OnLive, or I thought that was
That was OnLive. It was not Gaikai, which is their like major competitor.
Okay.
And so apparently they spend a ton of money on really high-end servers and only have, you know, 1,500 concurrent users at this point. So like they're just not bringing in enough money to sustain themselves. I don't know. I don't know what the story is. Eventually that seems like a really great service, right? To be able to run super high-end games on effectively dumb terminals would be pretty cool.
If you've got enough magic wizard lightning bandwidth to make the controls responsive enough, I guess it makes sense.
It was apparently playable on like pretty reasonable, like on not all that high-end bandwidth. I don't know what kind of magic they're doing. My theory that they had just played through every possible configuration of every game and pre-rendered every frame on your computer and were just referencing them by number.
The multiple Phyllis Diller's theory of quantum mechanics.
So I don't know. There's a bunch of like bad news in the news. Funcom is laying off some of its staff at the Secret World studio.
Like, yeah, what I read, it was all like QA people.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like 10% of the staff, though. It's not tiny. And a lot of that wasn't making enough money.
I am considering buying a lifetime subscription.
What does a lifetime subscription cost?
$200.
And is it your lifetime or the lifetime of the game?
It's probably whichever comes first, right?
Do you get anything bonus above just...
I think you probably get a bunch of cash shop credit. Okay. But what I expect is that you will get some sort of ongoing thing as a result of that once the game goes free to play. Which maybe it's a thing that I don't care about, but if they start selling content after it goes free to play, I will buy all the content. Right? Because like this is sort of the perfect MMO for me. Like, I don't mind popping in and playing through a couple hours of new content a month. That's sort of exactly what I want.
Yeah. I mean, my concern would be that 2 years from now, it just will stop even being a thing, right?
Yeah. I guess. I mean, but I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it because of the return on investment that I expect. I'm considering doing it because it's like, God, you know what? Like, this... I have gotten so much more my money's worth out of what I have spent on The Secret World so far than I have out of, you know, like the year that I subscribed to World of Warcraft and didn't play it at all.
Sure. I mean, for $200, even if it only lasts two more years, that's still less than $10 a month. So
yeah, sure. But I don't think fair. I think there is not a chance of it continuing to be a subscription MMO in 2 years.
I think they're already talking about their...
They were talking about it from the beginning. I mean, they said the quote that I saw was like, yeah, maybe 6 months or a year after launch, it goes free to play.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that companies are trying to like milk every market, right? Like they want to get the people that are excited about the game for its own sake, and then they want to get the market that will try any free to play game and then stick with the ones that are cool, and that's not a bad model, right?
Yeah, I'm curious how the level of discourse is going to react to the game going free to play.
Oh, it'll probably go way downhill, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think if I can be out of the starter area, you know, which I certainly can. I'm rationing the content to myself. Like, I went into Egypt and was like, oh man, I'm getting a bunch of sweet gear upgrades and stuff. But then I was like, you know, there was more stuff that I didn't see in the starting area. Mm-hmm. So I just like went back and got all the exploration achievements and like sought out and like I found all of the quests and did all of the story quests that were in the first three zones. And then it's like you get a bunch of experience and stuff for all the achievements. So that's cool.
You're playing the game like me. You might have found your game, man.
Not exactly. I am omitting some of the minor quests. There are a lot of quests that only exist so that you have a steady stream of stuff to do, sort of no matter how you traverse the zone.
Okay.
Right, so there are a lot of things that are just like, there is an object on the ground near the objective of some other quest that has you do some busy work that ends in you being at another place where there's a story quest.
That's kind of cool, actually.
It is. No, I mean, it's great, but I don't find myself compelled to do those because they don't have unique rewards. They don't even have unique... Like, every time you finish a story mission, you get, like, an email from the leader of your faction that just, like, sort of talks about how what you've done serves your secret society's needs. And
do you get,
you know, like, and it's
an
just
actual
interesting
email,
like,
or an in-game email?
An in-game
Okay.
And all of those have, like, unique rewards, and it's like based on the fact that I've run a lot of dungeons, like, none of the gear rewards from those quests is actually anything that I would equip, but, like, the hallmark of a quest that I'm interested in doing is that it is one of the ones that has the brown icon with the little running man on it, and it means that I will actually get some story when I finish it, as opposed to the generic, like, your faction thanks you, here's some token currency, mm-hmm, to buy some new weapons or whatever. And the quest that you get, with a couple of notable exceptions, the quest that you get from just objects lying on the ground are fairly minor and often kind of tedious. Just kill five of these, now kill five of these, now kill five of these. Hmm. But they're staggered across the map from where it started to where it's trying to lead you.
Huh.
Right? I mean, it's basically just a bunch of breadcrumbs from any place you might be to some place that might have something new for you to do. Because it's That's not about, neat. Like... It's not that, like, sort of spoke model where you know, the spokes model where you go to a quest hub, you go out, you do some quests, you come back and turn them in. You go out and do some more quests, you come back and turn them in, and then when you're done, you go to the next quest hub. Like, mm-hmm, it just doesn't work like that. Like, that's not how it's meant to be played.
Huh.
You know, which is why I got through the main story missions and did all this stuff and felt like I had really comprehensively explored the first zones, but there were, like, dudes that gave you quests that I just hadn't found.
Huh.
Right, because I just didn't happen to go over there.
How did you manage to find them? Just by wandering around that map?
Well, so it turns out that all of the quests that are in the achievement list for having done all of the quests, mm-hmm, in the zone are given to you by people who have icons on the map.
Okay.
And so I just looked at the map and I was like, oh, you know what? I never actually went over there and found that person. And so when I got there, it was like, yep, sure enough, they have two missions and they're two of the ones that are still grayed out on my achievement list of missions.
Cool.
Anyway, go on with the news, Kevin.
This isn't news. I forgot that in the What You Been Playing segment, I finally finished all of the Fusio puzzles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just the free ones, or did you actually buy the for pay ones?
Is there a for pay section?
I thought there were. I thought that app was free, but there were, like, puzzle packs you could buy.
I have not seen anything for sale in the game.
Yeah. Well, I could be wrong.
Huh. Is there... Nah, I don't see anything for sale.
Well, you can look at the guide in the next issue of Nintendo Power. Oh.
No.
Oh.
So sad. Yeah, so Nintendo
end of
Power's
an era.
Stopping publishing at the end of 2012. Are you going to get the last couple issues, Zach, so you can have the first and the last?
Oh, that's what the Mayans were talking about. Now it makes sense.
Yeah. It's that sucks in a way. But unlike when they stopped publishing Dungeon and Dragon magazines, where I was actually buying them regularly and was sad that I couldn't do that anymore, like, I have not cared about Nintendo Power for 20 years.
Yeah. Apparently, in, like, 2007, they changed up their format such that it became, like, a general gaming interest magazine. Because it was a bunch of, like, advertising shilling for years and years and years. I don't know. It's still sad.
I just still
it's
have
one
the,
of the
I
longest
the first...
running video game magazines in the world. it's been in publication since 1988. And yep. I think you and I both were kids that just got that first issue for free because everybody who signed up for the Nintendo Fun Club newsletter or whatever got that first issue.
And like, yeah. And then, I mean, it was like, I was like, oh God, mom, dad, you fucking have to buy this.
I know. Right. And like,
and they were like, the first yeah, you're right. You're right. It would be so cruel for this to exist and for us not to buy it for you. Here you go, son. Yep. And then it was, I didn't remember it being every 2 months.
Yeah.
But
for the first couple of years,
it was so like, so it, this is like a pre-internet era.
Yeah.
And so every time a new issue of Nintendo Power showed up, it was like, imagine if you had had no internet for a year and then suddenly you got a week of internet. That is what, that is what the sudden dump of awesome shit to look at and news about things. Right, because there was no other way to find out anything about anything.
Yeah.
Especially if you lived out in the boondocks like me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's this weird seminal, like, part of our childhoods. It's you know, for no other reason than nostalgia, it is sad to see it go.
Yeah.
But I haven't read anything in there in easily 20 years, so.
I mean, you know, magazines, right? Like, I feel like 30 years from now, National Geographic is going to still be published, and that's it.
Yeah.
And you'll still probably be getting your free copies of Modern Photographer or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, National Geographic's, subscriptions are pretty far down from their historic highs, so that even that's potentially in danger.
Like, their subscriber numbers are lower than they were in 1890.
Yes.
The first issue of Nintendo Power, when it showed up in my mailbox, the cover was torn off of it.
Oh
no!
Yeah, I know. It's like, this is just, it's screwed up. All I've got is the clay mushroom. I don't have the whole cover.
That sucks.
And then the rest of them are just disintegrating from being so dog-eared.
Mm. Yeah. I definitely used all of their maps and stuff in any of the games that I had.
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't help it, right? I mean, that, like, something like fucking Castlevania 2 would have just been impossible without that.
Yeah, that's totally true. So the next bit of news is both good and bad. PopCap announced Plants vs. Zombies 2, which is coming out in the, like, middle to early 2013. But then the very next day, they also laid off 50 people.
Yeah, including the guy that made Plants vs. Zombies. The guy that...
Really?
I was just about to say,
hope they didn't lay off the guy that...
Yeah, no, they did. The guy that gave the talk, where we were like, oh man, this guy, we should be more like this guy at GDC. Huh. That guy doesn't work for PopCap anymore.
That's amazing, actually, because it was only a small team of people for several years that made that game. It would be shocking to me that one of their most successful franchises to date would be somebody that they would lay off.
I mean, unless, you know, that this is a thing that I read somewhere on the internet, and often the internet totally full of shit, but unless I find out something real different about the way this has gone down, I think that maybe on principle I would not buy Plants vs. Zombies 2.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, I have this weird love-hate relationship with Plants vs. Zombies as it is. I mean, like, I boot it up and go, oh yeah, I'd love to unlock all these extra modes and get all these achievements and shit, but I can't force myself to play more than two levels of it in a row. I just
really
don't find it interesting enough.
Once you figure it out, like, it's an extremely easy game, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's super accessible, and so it gets to just be like, just doing it, as opposed to, like, you're not really playing a game because there's nothing challenging about it. Like, once you get an initial build
it's always the same.
I mean, and I definitely, like, it on my second, like, I bought it when it came out and just played through it on my computer, and then I bought it when it came out for iOS and played through it again on my phone, and I definitely, like, found more efficient ways of doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, optimized a little bit between those two playthroughs, but You know, like always using a potato bomb for the first handful of zombies, right? Like so that you have more time to build up sunflowers so that you can just start shitting out the stuff right away.
Yeah.
Right? Like just that is the thing that didn't occur to me. Also because I didn't ever need to. You don't need to be good at the game to succeed at it. And so there's not really any incentive to get better at it. But that said, it's a pretty awesome game.
Yeah. I mean, I respect it. It's just
You don't like tower defense games, Riff, though, right? Like
that is true. That's yep. I do not.
It's very much in the style of tower defense. So
yeah.
What else, Kevin?
Castle Crashers coming to Steam eventually. They're not even venturing to give like a release date. I think I would probably. Especially if it comes out on Mac, I think I would probably buy it.
Yeah, I was going to say I would enjoy a Mac version.
I don't think I would play that again.
Say what?
I don't think I would play it again.
Really?
I got such a bad taste left in my mouth by it the first time. When
I definitely felt betrayed, but I would totally play it again. Especially if there's cloud saves, you know?
Man, they won't work. Everything says it has cloud saves, and then nothing does.
Space Cam had cloud saves. My Space Cam totally crashed, and I logged back in. It was like we can't. Your game doesn't match the state of the cloud save. I was like, that does not bode well. But then I loaded it back up, and it was fine. The cloud save saved the day.
Good story.
Yeah.
Not making fun of you. I mean, that really is a good story. I'm glad that happened to you. But I still like. I don't know, man. Plus Tom Fulp being kind of a butthole, and then like
Dan Paladin is awesome. Dan Paladin is
great. Yeah, no. Right.
The other guys over at Behemoth are not my favorite people in the world, but I have had very minimal interactions with them, so you know, I could have just been catching them at bad times.
I don't know. So. Though, you know, we beat Castle Crashers, and like that's kind of enough. Like you know, there's it's so like I don't want to play Castle Crashers again for the same reason I want to play like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game again, right? Like I played it once; it was kind of the same level over and over again. Which you know, there's a few different things about, but like once you've seen like a deer being propelled along a path by its own diarrhea, that's pretty much it. You can't top that experience, no matter how many farts you imagine in the rest of the dialogue. So it's like,
doesn't that bear shit a lot in the woods or something?
Well, there's that one. There's the one level where everything is shitting all over everything.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I have to support those guys because their sense of humor is clearly right up my alley, or something.
Right.
But you know,
Diarrhea Rocket Alley. It's called
exactly. and then the last bit of news ties into the assignment in that the Mega Man RPG was announced for iOS. I'm a little dubious about it because apparently it's some sort of social game, those words strike fear into my heart. But if it's not terrible, then maybe it'll be cool.
You know, I feel like the Mega Man Battle Arena games for the Game Boy Advance were a hair's breadth away from being something that I would have absolutely loved.
Are those the ones where you had like Tron World and collected chips and software and stuff?
Yeah,
those were interesting.
The idea of the combat was pretty cool because it was like combat that took place on a grid that you were standing on and you were sort of moving around and there were enemies on it in particular spots and you had attacks that would cover different portions of the grid and stuff. Mm-hmm. But then the environments that you were running around in were just Tron World, but super, super boring. And it was a really long way between stuff with all these random battles and stuff. And I was like, oh, God, this could have been so good with just very slight adjustments of the pacing and sort of scope of the both the world and the kind of meta structure of it. But it was like, ugh, every time I tried to play one, it was just like, ah, fuck, I want to like this so bad, but I don't. Hmm. That's a neat, like, it's a neat wrench to throw in turn-based RPG combat, right? Yeah. Even something like that. What are those Monsters Den, the Congregate interminable series of like, there's like procedurally generated dungeons that they might as well not be. They might as well just be lists of rooms for all the for all of the interest that is lent to it by having a dungeon in the first place. But
I mean, is that the one with the just the ridiculously bad inventory management? Because you would always get 20 items and then your inventory would fill up and you'd have to like
and the icons are like 12 by 12 pixels or something. It's a constant. Yeah, but I mean, it was, you know, that didn't stop us from playing a lot. I forget where I was going with that. Oh yeah, it had those things where there were like your party had six spots that they, the four of them could occupy, and the monsters had six spots that they could occupy, and they could like, you know, you had things that could attack whole columns, and you had things that would go across a row, and yeah, and like, you know, dudes would summon dudes in front of them to protect them and stuff. Like, just adding a little bit of positionality to it increased the sort of complexity of the game grammar to the point where it was like, oh, this is actually something fresh and exciting tacked on to a very time-worn system of a select attack or select a spell and then click the dude you want to attack or spell.
Dude is spelled D-U-D-E.
Mm-hmm. That's all. Yep. That's how Word Realms works. That's you like you have to just keep redrawing tiles until you can spell dude. So this assignment.
Yeah.
Yeah, this assignment.
Mega Man. Wait, are we still talking about Mega Man?
Yep.
Riff hated it.
It was like the distilled essence of everything that I fucking hate about platformers.
Riff.
Riff didn't even finish one. Riff didn't even beat one man.
Wait, you didn't even beat a single boss?
I beat the first dude in Mega Man 2.
What do you mean the first dude? There's eight different possible dudes.
I started with Metal Man. I beat Metal Man in Mega Man 2.
Okay, he's pretty easy. But then you get those awesome metal discs, which let you kill like eight other dudes.
Yeah, they were pretty good, except you know. Dying to bullshit all the time because the boss, sliding on ice everywhere.
The network of vulnerabilities in Mega Man 2 was super asymmetrical. Like,
because metal,
every,
the discs, everything was vulnerable.
Yeah, metal kills everything except for two things, and bubble lead kills those two things.
Yeah. Bubble was kind of a pain in the ass, though. Metal discs were like awesome. Yeah, because like metal discs were awesome and fly across the screen, and bubble, you'd like sort of, you'd fart one out and it would kind of sit there and then it would roll.
Yeah, and you'd almost, it was very difficult to hit something with bubble lead without also colliding with it.
Yeah.
So I played all the way through to that fucking bubble boss in the next to last stage of Mega Man, and even with save states I couldn't beat that fucking thing.
This is a thing that I remembered from the old days, but you can beat some of the worst bosses by pausing and unpausing pretty frequently with special attacks.
Yeah, that's how I beat the rock guy.
The rock guy was just unfun without that.
That like the precision that you have to have combined with the number of fucking cycles of his.
Oh god, damn it!
Teleporting across, like, I watched somebody beat that game on a fucking Nintendo as a kid, right? Yeah. I had seen all of that, and looking back on it, I was like, how the fuck did anybody do that? And I know that I'm not as young as I used to be. My reflexes weren't all they were cracked up to be even as a kid, but like, fuck that boss. I mean, it's almost like they left that pause trick in on purpose so that...
See, I remember,
that's basically how,
like,
I feel
as
about
a kid,
the entire game.
I spent a couple hours farming extra lives in Mega Man so that I would have a chance of actually finishing the game. You know, I'd get up to like 30 lives and I'd be like, okay, I think this is enough where I can sort of figure out what's going on and actually make some progress.
Or you could at least go into the Contra stage and beat it.
Yeah.
Or Life Force.
But
one of these days we got to do Life Force as an assignment.
I'd be done with that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of nostalgic.
I remember that being a lot of fun.
We had a cabinet of that in the local arcade.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I didn't remember it being an arcade like that, maybe on like a PlayChoice 10 or something, but
I think it was a standard cabinet.
Yeah, the first Mega Man didn't even have any fucking passwords or anything.
Yeah. Without save states, I would have fucking... Yeah. Like, I don't know if you read the forum thread about this, but, like, somebody was talking about, like, oh, I hope nobody got all the way to Wily's Castle without getting the magnet gun, and, like, I was like, I totally got to Wily's Castle without having that fucking magnet gun, and I got to the room where you have to have the little platforms, and I'm like, what the fuck am I supposed to... Oh, you know, I saw something that I couldn't get because I didn't have that, like, the crash weapon to get through something yet. Well, I bet I probably
fucking... have the Gutsman, yeah.
Yeah, so fuck... And so I had to go through that and get the, like, crash bombs or whatever, the things to break through the things.
No, crash bombs, that's in the second one. You need need the guts. Yeah, you just need the Gutsman thing to move, like, those three blocks out of the way to get that magnet beam. Yeah, like, yeah. So I feel like that was a real horseshit thing that they put in that they directly addressed in Mega Man 2.
Yeah.
Like, I have a whole sheet of...
a lot more fun.
I mean, Mega Man 2 still had some of that because there was like an energy tank or something that I jumped down into a place to get, and then it was not possible to jump back out of there.
Ah, yeah, but you keep the tank. So I feel like in a way, so if you hadn't gone to that level first, then you would have had some mobility devices that you could have used to get out of there, right? But even if you didn't, you were sacrificing a guy for an energy tank. Which the energy tanks go into your sub menu and are just a full heal,
a
consumable full heal, right? So I have this whole sheet of notes that are like, this is why Mega Man 2 is a million fucking times better than Mega Man 1. All right, so it explains to you after you kill a dude that you got a new weapon from them, which, you know, you knew that playing Mega Man, but this actually says, hey, here's this new thing. And then instead of like hiding the mobility power up in one of the stages, it just every once in a while gives you one at the end of a stage.
To be fair, the English translations of all that shit was awful.
Oh yeah, but it had like that. It had the whole intro sequence, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, having an actual story.
Thought it was weird that
cool.
A robot has hair.
But I mean, it's you know like what Ultraman has hair, not Ultraman. Who's Rocket Child? What's that? It's like the Bob's
Astro Boy.
Astro Boy. There you go.
He doesn't really have hair, though. He does. It's like a plastic. Is it like individual hairs, or is it just like?
I don't know. I mean, so would you say that Bob's Big Boy doesn't have hair because it's a plastic thing that looks like hair? Like,
I mean, his entire body is a plastic thing that looks like a body.
So are you saying that Bob's Big Boy doesn't have a dick?
I'm saying he doesn't have a soul.
Okay. That I can believe. Fucking corporate shill. So there were 8 dudes instead of 6, so that was pretty cool. Yep. The stages were shorter and had a lot more personality.
Yep.
Eh, you know, I don't know if they had a lot more personality. They were a lot more distinct from one another in the traversal and enemies.
Yeah. It had an
easy mode, which is a thing that I don't know about you guys, but I welcomed it.
It had a normal mode, and then it had a hard mode.
Well, yeah. Also, it had, with the exception of the little hard hat dudes, almost everything that I think of as looking like a thing from Mega Man was a thing that was from Mega Man 2.
Huh.
And later. Like the big, like the those fire-breathing wolf things.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, just the like, jumping robot torsos with the springs on the bottoms or whatever, and like the guys with the shields and the guns, like,
yeah, I fucking hate those guys.
Ah, come on.
Yeah,
you just
shoot them faster.
They're all fair. That's the thing. The game is incredibly difficult, but it is extremely fair.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, and that's something that I feel like save states really help you realize.
Yeah,
right? Like,
because you can try a room over and over again, as opposed to having to like go through everything leading up to that room over and over.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
So there were more mobility upgrades. There was also that whole bombs and doors thing, which I guess really parallels the Gutsman ability to move the blocks out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
The boss sequence had a map screen to tell you your progress, except that it was lying.
Yeah.
You know, and there's the one extra stage at the end. There were so many of the levels had multiple paths through them, which were sometimes
Oh, you mean like the screen would bifurcate?
Yeah,
it wasn't really
more,
not really
more
multiple
risk
pads.
No, but I mean, it was. It was like the spaces were isolated from one another.
Sure. Okay. Sure.
You know, like more risk for more reward or whatever. Or sometimes it was just like, oh, sorry, you chose wrong. Fuck you. Like, it was just like rewards memorization of it. But I mean, it's a game that's designed for you to play. You know, you beat your head against this thing until you finally beat it, and then you get a password that has it beaten, and it's like, All right, I fucking earned that. There's that weird puzzle boss in the end where you can only kill it with crash bombs, but there aren't enough crash bombs for you to both open all the gates and kill all the boss nodules.
Yeah, so you either have to die once having blown open the doors, or be very,
or you have to use the mobility things to get around them.
Yeah,
but then
I thought that was
really
cool.
It's really hard to do that in the amount of time that it gives you, because it's kind of just like a life tax when you're in there. Because I don't think you can actually avoid the shots.
I was avoiding the shots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, okay, I'd be able to. I was avoiding like at one out of every two, probably.
Okay. Well,
if
so
you
I
jump at just the right
I
time,
I can't avoid the shots. And something I thought was like a super nice touch was there being no music on the very last stage. Huh. Like just that short thing where you're avoiding those drops that are coming from the ceiling, but all it is just a little cave that you're walking through with no music before you go into the final boss room.
That's cool.
And then the final boss is like totally fucking Crazy Town's alien guy.
Yeah. Which is, it turns out, is just an illusion. Spoilers.
Yeah, but, you know, but I mean, spoiler alert. It turns out it was actually just Bruce Willis's head on a little portable hovercraft.
I also thought the weapons and abilities that you got in Mega Man 2 were more interesting and fun than the ones
in
they
were. It was a lot clearer what was going on with them. They were a lot more distinct from one another.
Yeah. That leaf shield is pretty great. Like, That plus all the moving platforms was awesome, right? Like the synergies that would happen
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Like I was playing with save states, I never used anything other than the Mega Buster while I was actually playing through the stages, which is totally not how I would play that game if I was playing it for real.
Yeah, no, like you get on a moving platform, turn the leaf shield, and you're golden until you have to get off, because it stays on you until you make a move yourself. Yeah, I really like Mega Man. I had wanted to, before the show, go and play Mega Man X, like one of those, and I had never did. I never played any of the Mega Man games on the Super Nintendo, so I have no idea how that played out.
Yeah, I there have been several times in my like sort of history of having, you know, capable Super Nintendo emulation that I've wanted to play that. Sort of the same with Super Metroid. Like, I've never managed to make it through Super Metroid.
Oh, it's good. You should definitely do that at some point.
Yeah, that's why we got to do that as an assignment someday. Yeah. That and Link to the Past. I kind of want to play. I mean, I've played through A Link to the Past several times, but I would like to do it again with the eyes of my age and see how I feel about it. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed Mega Man 2, and I kind of want to keep playing through the series, actually, because there's a bunch of them that I missed. There's some that, you know, this was a thing where I never owned any of the Mega Man games as a kid, but there was always somebody that would have one here and there.
I played, you know, I played 1 and 2 as a kid, and I definitely beat 2 as a kid. I remembered everything in the game. 1, I don't think I ever beat, because I think 1 was too hard for me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I saw somebody else beat 1, but I think you're right. I think I did beat 2.
Yeah.
It seems like easy mode. I meant to look up after I beat it what the actual differences are between normal and... But like, it was so friendly with the power-ups.
Yeah.
That, and it also seemed like there were probably some rooms that weren't empty on hard mode. Like, there were just some rooms where it's like, there's just nothing in here that can hurt you. This doesn't seem like the kind of thing that the Mega Mans would do. and it makes me wonder if there are just more enemies in the difficult mode. Or if the enemies just have more hit points, or what. I should have looked it up instead of just speculating. So, what's our next assignment, Kevin?
We are going to play Warp. It's a game that was released this past year. It is available on Windows, Xbox, and PS3. in it, it's what a what's a it's like a puzzle platformer stealth game where you play an alien trying to escape a laboratory.
So like Abe's Odyssey.
Sure. Munch.
Edward Munch's The Odyssey, starring Homer.
Weird.
So the only difference between normal and difficult in Mega Man was is the number of shots that it takes to kill an enemy.
Oh.
So
there well, you have good. It. Thanks. Good research. Research. Yeah.
The internet.
All right. Sweet assignment, Mega Bros.
Cool.
Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us some feedback, how would they do it?
Well, people are always welcome to tweet at us, at VGHotDog. They can email us, VGHotDog@gmail.com, or they can check out the forums, accessible via videogameshotdog.com.
Awesome.
How's that?
Forums are as how lively them as ever. Somebody said something to us on Twitter, and I'm going to read it right now in lieu of doing a real listener's mail segment, because we are out of time. We're not out of time, but we've gone through a bunch of time.
Over time.
We spent a lot of time thinking and talking about video games
right
here on this episode of Video Games Hot Dog.
As we do.
Let's see. Somebody sent me a picture of some chocolate-covered licorice. So
oh, yeah?
Cool. Somebody suggests Kingdom of Loathing as an assignment would be neat. Using that as an excuse to force you to play through the game might be useful for revamps. Yeah, sure. Maybe so. Let's see. W. David Shepard says, Zach, we all know you're saying Dawn Guard. You know, I bought Dawn Guard, but I haven't played it yet.
I will eventually buy it. I think I'm going to wait for the Steam sale, though.
Yeah. W. David Shepard also says, Hey, Zach, Riff, and Kevin, why in 2012 do devs not make games say our custom in-game name with a speech emulator? Not even robots. Why? I mean, I think they just know that everybody would just be, like, boner farts.
Well, what, I mean, what was it? Spick Nasty 420?
Like, yes, Spick Nasty 420. That's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I sort of, I would turn on Dr. Spatzo mode in every video game. Like, if they could just replace all of every character's dialogue with Dr. Spatzo, I would just love. I would play that.
And every ellipsis is replaced with...
No, well, just Dr. Spatzo saying, fart. all right. Well, thanks for recording an episode of Video Games Hot Dog with me, Riff and Kevin. And thanks, listeners, for listening to an episode of Video Games Hot Dog.
You guys are awesome.
Woo! Bye, everyone.
See you.
Have a great week, everyone.
Stations for video. Students for video. Hog dogs.
Hog nerds.
Hog dogs.
Hog dogs. Garg.